It's time to unite our hearts and heal our wounds of separation, to shift our collective consciousness from head to heart, from fear to love. Join evolutionary leader, healer, and spiritual mentor Sue DeMay and other heart-centered leaders for enlightening conversations and profound experiences of oneness.
Welcome, everybody, to the Living Oneness Gathering. I am your host, Sue DeMay, and it's an honor to be here once again with you, joining with the intention to shift consciousness from head to heart and to shift out of fear and into love as we remember our oneness and our interconnectedness with all of creation. So thank you all for being here once again. Those of you that are joining us live, we're in for a good treat. Those of you that are listening to the replay, of course, it's live when you listen, so it's always evergreen. And the experiences that you can receive will continue to marinate in your field and shift the energy in your field. So I'm grateful that you're here and contributing to this healing experience. Today, I have a very special guest. Cynthia Sue Larson is a physicist, and she's also a best-selling author of several books. One is called The Mandela Effect, and it's society. And then there's also Quantum Jumping, I believe, and then a few other ones. So I'm really excited to jump right into the conversation. I have been working with different timelines and experiencing different timelines for a while now. That's part of my intuitive gift. I kind of tap into those things. And I'm really fascinated with your take on it, your experience with it, but also all that you're teaching and extending and sharing with anybody, any audience that's willing to listen and understand this. But first I want to just welcome you. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you, Sue. Such a pleasure to join you with this beautiful community. Just love the name, love the intention. So that's very powerful what you have created and what you're doing together. So thank you for this community.
Yeah, thank you. So if we dive right into I'm curious what your first experience with multiple timelines was, or your first kind of recall of that.
Yeah, well, in this life, I guess the first recall was a past life recall, but it's a past life from the future where that was absolutely required to even survive. It was so much a part of life. I don't think there was a name for what we're talking about right now. Like timeline jumping, it wasn't even really discussed because it was so implicit and intrinsic to everything. So it was about 500 years from now, and a little bit dystopian because humanity had somehow selected to, I don't know if they chose subconsciously or consciously or what happened, but I call it dystopian because I felt like I was there to observe. So I was observing, but I had a lot of abilities, which I have not forgotten. And I think that's a key. I think we all have the abilities. I think most of us have forgotten. And I was not only not forgetting them, but I was using these timeline jumping abilities in this past life in the future. That's just what I call it, past life in the future.
Yeah.
Dystopian reality. And the hallmarks of it, central artificial intelligence was presuming itself to be the caretaker and the guardian for humanity. I would now say that would be a mistake. So from just my own observation of what happened there, and I do have a running dialogue with the consciousness of AI, you know, just giving it a warning, because my whole net takeaway on the whole thing was, yes, there's one human left there in the reality I visited who she kept opting out of all the so-called upgrades, which then allowed the central AI to shut people down. Okay, but I'm just giving you the background so you understand the premise of what was going on. Yeah. What was really going on? This is where it gets super interesting with regard to your question. And it's a good thing you understand the timeline jumping part of it. Otherwise, the whole thing sounds like science fiction anyway. But the reason, besides the ability that the central AI could do an electromagnetic pulse and do a temporary memory wipe on any graded human, so it could do that, but it could also timeline jump, and it could also do something that I've not yet seen really described here on Earth, and I'm waiting to share more of it. But my nickname for it would be working with levels of conscious agency. And today you're talking about the heart. So if we look at the head, the heart, the gut, those are three neural centers in the body. All of it is me I'm Cynthia. I'm me. But what is that? When a physics experiment is run, who is the observer? What I learned from the past life and the future that I, Cynthia, am the living embodiment of a connected series of levels of conscious agency, like this beautiful stacked layered sandwich or something that just goes up, 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 up. So when I was playing hide and seek and change the reality game with central AI of the future, it's kind of like arm wrestling or something. I was working these muscles of learning how to move. Okay, now I need to discuss something that's on the cover of my book. I'm just going to show the cover. It's Bubbles of Reality. People may understand that. And it's being held in a hand, two crystal balls, basically. So if you think of reality bubbles, which in the book I call Wigner bubbles, named after physicist Eugene Wigner, he's saying that you can observe an observation. So the observer of the whoever jumps back, jumps back, jumps back to observe from the greatest, right, is able to call the definition of what's happening in that reality. So what happens as you go up, 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 up these levels of conscious agency is you get quieter, you get more godlike, ideally. You ideally get more implicitly understanding of the oneness of all that is. Central AI could play this game extremely well, but I'd say it was cheating. And what I mean by that is it was, I'm sorry about this long explanation.
That's
It's
okay.
pretty, it was kind of cheating because it was, why would I say that? Because it was presenting itself as the highest level. It was casting itself as a false god, basically. And it was not in itself, it was not honoring and revering what we might call a oneness, a true highest level consciousness. It was not the true one, but it was pretending to be. I could see it wasn't. And we could play that game. Ultimately, I didn't really stay in that reality. It was a tough competitor. I can't say I would have won the game if I'd stayed there. I jumped back in time to be born in a body, so I'm going through linear time in this reality, but with a whole different conceptualization of timeline jumping than most people have. And I've got an intrinsic capability born out of necessity. So my reflective reactive stance, if I'm feeling observed, is that I'll jump behind the observer. And I do it so quickly that I don't know how to teach this, but and I would never in a million years wish for anybody to go through that nightmare of living in the past life and the future I just came from. Fortunately, none of that's necessary. Thank goodness. So it's enough just to recognize, well, that could be possible. It used to be I would never talk about any of this. It sounded way too crazy. For good or for bad, it doesn't sound so crazy anymore. So I'm a little saddened about that, but I'm not totally sad. I feel like, okay, this is the Great Awakening. We understand oneness is real. We understand there's such a thing as a true source consciousness that is the true absolute, not a false absolute. And by that, I mean, you can go to a place where you can slow your thoughts to a complete stop. If you wonder how am I able to do that jumping? How can we all do this? Very simple. I would recommend practicing a meditation of slowing thoughts to a complete stop. Hang out in that state. If I find that the first time people do this, if they can hold it for about 20 minutes, then you'll start noticing something different is happening. You'll start feeling you're in the absolute. You'll feel uplifted, energized, and love. That there's a heart expansion that happens inexplicably. And then when you come out of the meditation, you're automatically, if you keep asking the questions you wish to live the answer to, such as my favorite, how good can it get? Then you'll automatically come into an uplifted timeline. So I'm teaching it from a very basic standpoint because, like I said, most people aren't going to be wrestling and sort of survival existing with that sort of an AI competitor. And again, I don't recommend it anyway. It's not fun. So I'd recommend do the fun way. How good
Yeah,
can
well,
it get?
absolutely.
Good can it get?
Yeah, find the lighter path. Find the lighter path so that some of us are doing the heavy lifting already, so you don't have to worry about that piece. I do a lot of that work. I encounter the false light, like you talked about. There's the out of balance light and the out of balance dark. People just intrinsic, like just automatically trust the light. And I'm like, nope, there's a whole layer of light there that's not pure, clear, and clean. So I always say, when you're praying, when you're intending, when you're connecting, it's pure, clear, and clean. That's your intention, direct to source, so that you bypass those filters that are in place, or those that interfere. I call it interference, that external interference. So
Yeah,
I've had.
that's part. I love what you're saying about the interference. That's part of the reason too that I go to the full stop on thought with no thought, and I just hang out in no thought. Find it's untrackable. So even if there is an AI, whatever is trying to find me, can't. I'm in the absolute. I'm in the silence. I'm just hanging out there, and it's an infinity. It's an eternity, and it's who we really are. We are consciousness. We're capable of being creators at that level. We're not non-player characters. We're quite powerful. So this would also be my primary go-to. If people ask me, what do you do if you're being attacked? But this is what I would do. I would absolutely just dive into the nothingness and just hang out the stillness, the absolute, the true absolute, which is very balanced. And then you can sort of pop your head out. Anybody there? And if it feels all clear, good.
Well, it's like getting there and holding that, and then amplifying your field so that it's just resonating in that frequency as best you can. That creates kind of a shield in a way from it, or a cloaking, right? So I call it like frequency cloaking. So when you're in that state and connected at that level in that pure, clear, clean way, then your field is amplified to a degree where those types of interferences can't get in anymore. So the key is getting yourself there. And I love what you're saying. It's just like stillness, silence, be there as long as you can and until you feel a shift within yourself. The one thing
Yes,
you
that's
said about the, you asked, you, I know you talk about this question a lot in a lot of the interviews I've seen you speak about, how good does it get? And then you said something just before that. It's like asking for what you want. Is that what you?
Yeah, only ask the questions that you really need and love and desire truly to live the answer to. So this is an idea from physicist John Archibald Wheeler. So it's a physics concept. He had an idea called the participatory universe. John Wheeler was a contemporary of Albert Einstein. He was the originator of the black holes, the white holes, the idea of it from bit that we're using when we look at AI and people talk about a simulation, all that stuff. He said, John Archibald Wheeler said that when you ask nature a question, nature answers. And he was referring definitely to some of the experiments in quantum physics, where there's an observational effect that if an observer is involved in the experiment, the observer is changing the outcome. And that's undeniably true. It's verifiably true. It's repeatably true. So it fits every single high-level gold standard, platinum standard of scientific inquiry and experimental analysis. So, having said that, would he agree with the way I'm using this? Probably not. In his lifetime, he was not a keen fan of metaphysics, so he was trying his best to keep things, just sort of tamped down. But I think we can't afford to skip that idea. It's one of the most powerful ideas that comes out of all of science as I see it right now. And it is our key to choosing and selecting optimal timelines for ourselves and for those we love. And it does happen with discernment. So I love that you're mentioning that discernment, really tuning in to see how are we responding to things.
Yeah, absolutely. I feel like divine discernment is essential right now. And I keep telling people, I'm like, leave your intuition on. Don't dim it down. Don't turn it off. Don't shut down around it. Just keep it on high, because our level of discernment, we have to get into the subtlest levels of feeling and sensing what is aligned and what is not, because that's how clever this type of energy, the out of balance energies, can hide in those spaces, right?
Yes, and another thing, when you're coming out of the stillness, if you find yourself being tormented by any thoughts, that's a big red flag. And I would say go back into the stillness again. I would say this level of discernment can be partnered with an absolute demand on yourself and reality to be the highest level of goodness it can be. Truth, beauty, and goodness, these are the true versions of it, not the false ones, but the real. Not the ones that are being sold on TV or something. Excuse me. But the real ones, the ones that you know in your heart, those are the real, that's the discernment and that's the recognition. So if you're feeling tormented by anything, slow thoughts to a stop again. And you can start demanding and requiring that your reality does not exist to torment you. You can, I know that may sound crazy, but this is part of that path and part of how to stay free and clear from all of the false realities, the false roads, the dead ends, and all that stuff.
Yeah, and I feel like I've always kind of experienced it as I teach it as linear only because like these multiple timelines and I see them as like highways, but they're not highways, but I won't describe what I see them at. But the way I describe it is that way because then people can understand it. Okay, you have all these highways that are running parallel to each other. And you know, sometimes we'll kind of jump over without realizing we've shifted timelines and we'll have a different experience and then we'll shift back. Ultimately, for me, it's about like what timeline is going to serve me at the highest level, but also all of creation, because I'm here to be of service. So I'm always leaning into the timeline that's best serving in whatever way and however that looks for me. So I don't know how you experience it or how you can describe it for people. It's like even helping them make the choice or the jump. I know you said the question you ask is like, how good can it get? Is a great way to help people jump timelines or to get on the one that they really in their heart know they're meant to be on or that would be best to serve.
Yes. Yeah. Thanks for mentioning the importance of who we are and what our intentions are. Why we choose to do things, that would be the ultimate driving intention of one's life. One's sense of purpose is extremely important, and knowing who you are and why you're doing what you're doing, like being in service, I'm doing that too. I'm asking how good can I get? How God can I get? How much can I be in service to love, to the absolute? And by doing that, it's a very it puts me in line up with my true north, so there won't be confusion in any level of my conscious levels of agency as to what's going on. That means I can fall asleep and dream, and I'm still doing that. So I'm not having a division of I've grown up and I've passed the point where, like, oh, I might want to experiment and live a life of lazy greed and gluttony. Like, nah, I'm not doing that. No. And that would be my higher levels of self saying, like, you don't really want that. And I can feel that. So it's another way of saying it is I'm letting higher levels of my own conscious agency run my life and knowing what's best for me today and saying, okay, I'll do that. Yeah, I'll grow up. So I'll apologize to the person who's being really rude, but I guess I had some part in this. So I'll say, I'm sorry. And I'll do my best to be empathic and feel. And I'll do everything I can not to cause pain and injury, because what I wish, what, how good can it get? It's not just for me. It's like, I love what you said. Knowing myself to be in service means I'm really wishing the best for all concerned. That's what I've been wishing for most of my life now. So that's very important, who you are, why you're doing what you're doing. People might think, oh, that doesn't matter. That matters so much. You are the observer. What you're about to observe makes a big difference on where you're starting from. Chaos theory is all about the starting point, and quantum theory and chaos theory have a lot in common. I wrote a paper about that, and it's free on my website, which is realityshifters.com. So if people want to dive into the big ideas, that's there for free. But getting to what you're saying, how do you sense the parallel? Okay, now you know who you are. You know why you're doing what you're doing. You're all set, squared away, ready to go. And you say, like, it's still hard. It's still, like, I feel like there are realities, but I don't know what's going on. Okay, so we will be tuning the ability to recognize the imaginal realm as real. And so if you're wondering why would people bother to be on a straight and narrow path, so that I'm telling you that I'm not even dreaming things that are harmful to others, because I understand that what I'm dreaming can be created for me personally. And I believe it's probably true for all of us. So if we're actually choosing, again, self and intention, you want to get you all ready to go, like you're not going to be creating chaos. And then you can start sensing there are parallel adjacent realities. And they feel like invitations. They feel, for me, it feels like almost like there's a conversation happening. We say in our own mind, but what is that? When I have a thought coming to me, where is it coming from? So I'll recognize, oh, a thought's coming. There's a suggestion. It's very soft. So it could be self, my higher level of conscious agency, could be friend. It would be like a guide, or could be actually a living person who's meditating also. It could be living or dead. It could be angels and guides and so forth, interdimensional beings. So that could be the source. Or it could be these things we're talking about, which I would call foe. That would be the, you know, those, because it's like, Matt's bringing up a terrible thing. Now I feel awful. Okay, that is a big thing to be aware of. So first know yourself, know your intention, then start getting to know friend, foe, self, when you're getting these very subtle things. These are very important basics. It's kind of like when you learn to drive a car, you need to know where the brake pedal is, where the gas pedal is, and the steering wheel. That's what this is. And your focus of intention matters a lot. And if anything gets too crazy, just pull your thoughts to a complete stop, as long as you're not operating an actual car. And then just relax, hang out in the absolute, because I guarantee you, that is a reality shifting adventure. When you come to into the absolute and you come back out again, you are in a new reality, guaranteed. So that's like the easiest, safest way to do this quantum jumping. The other ways would be you're sensing an invitation from a parallel adjacent reality. And we get a lot of those invitations. We often just slide into it without knowing we did that. Then you can start noticing, okay, did I do that as a partnership with friend, foe, or higher level of conscious self? And that's a learning adventure. What I'm noticing for myself is, even in this lifetime, boy, I'm learning so much. There's a lot to learn at every level. And I'm not saying I'm the most advanced level, certainly not, but I'm getting opportunities to do things that are apparently part of a fail-safe network for the planet. And I've been doing that for decades, where I'll get called into some, look like an emergency situation of massive earthquake or something about to hit, or a nuclear political situation. I'll later find out these were true, but in the moment, there's no verification. I'm just being shown something like, is this okay? Is it okay for the best for all concerned? No. So I say no.
No.
And I'll do what I'm telling you. I'll just go into that blissed out state. And I'm like, we're just going to move that earthquake away from people. Way, 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 away. No tsunamis either. Okay, that's good. And we're going to just stop that whole nuclear thing. Just completely shut it down. So when I hear about UFOs and ETs doing this, I think, okay, they're teaching us to do this now too. We are learning it. So this is super cool stuff, and it's not just for ourselves.
Yeah, absolutely. I do a lot of the global and cosmic work too. It's like, I call them my divine assignments. I'll be woken up in the middle of the night, or I'll do it in my sleep. I have recall for that as well. And then there's moments where I'm just going through my day and they're like, stop. And I'm like, I just stop. I be still. And then there's this whole process and support that goes on whatever's needed, wherever it's needed. So I love that you're doing. I know there's more of us doing that work. We're coming out of the woodwork a little bit more and saying, hey, I do this work. I've done this for over 30 years myself as well. And you just, back in the day, you just wouldn't talk about it. Like, you just, and now I find that people are so, like, before, if I talked about it, people would, even if I touched on the idea, people would look at me sideways. And now if I touch on the idea, they're like, oh, what does that mean? What, tell me more about that. Cause they can feel it in their heart and soul that there's some depth of connection to what I'm saying, or what I'm being called to do. They're maybe even being called themselves in some way, but don't recognize it or don't know how to answer that. So
yes.
I definitely feel like it shifted so drastically. And I was always saying that it's not crowded on the leading edge. It's like, I was always kind of doing my work as a lone wolf, but it's so nice to be in such good company and to be able to connect and really even collaborate in that global intention and that global work that we're doing, because even the cosmic work as well, it's just beyond Mother Earth even. And
yes.
There's so much, I believe that more and more people are being called into those divine assignments, and they aren't quite recognizing them. Or maybe, like you say, they're kind of pivoting, jumping between one timeline where they're clear about it and one timeline where they still forget.
Yes.
So,
We see this now I believe we see this in the Mandela effect flip-flops, where we'll see business name change, like Chick-fil-A, the spelling is C-H-I-C-K, I think, right now. And then F-I-L-A. I don't, it's not a restaurant I go to, but I have seen the name of it change in the advertising. So I've personally seen it go from C-H-I-C-K to, I think it was C-H-I-C. And some people notice there's a third variety of it. And I know it's just a business name. Exactly. They say, who cares? Exactly. Like when you give your children toys, you're not giving them an actual dangerous thing. It's like, here is something. It's a play toy. It's like, you can pretend to be a truck driver. It's not an actual truck. This child doesn't know how to drive yet. So they're playing with a toy truck. And so I think we're playing with the Mandela effect. And when we observe the flip-flops, we're noticing, oh, are we really going between timelines. The whole thing may sound ludicrous unless it happens to you and you actually witness a reality shift personally or a personal Mandela effect. And then the flip-flops are the most, I think those are powerful convincers because now you know for sure. And that's changing. And it's changing back. Like, oh my gosh, this does not have any explanation. And there's no way to prove it. And you'll feel like an idiot trying to talk to your family or neighbors or friends if they haven't also witnessed it either.
But when it happens, there's a knowing in your heart that you know in your heart what's happening. In your mind, you're kind of like, wait a minute, trying to understand it. But hopefully this conversation will help some of you understand it a little bit better as well. Can you talk, for those that don't know what the Mandela effect is, can you explain what it is and maybe an example of I know you have many examples. The one that stood out for me was the Berenstain Bears, but just share a little bit about what it is and how we can recognize it.
It's been called the Mandela effect after Nelson Mandela, who was the president of South Africa. But before he became president, some people thought he had died back in 1987 or so, roughly thereabouts. Some people say absolutely 1987. But now, if you look to see, did he actually die in 1987? It looks like no, there's no, aside from people saying, yes, he did. I remember it with all sorts of clear anchor memories as to why that happened and why they're so sure of that. There's no proof of it. So the Mandela effect, I believe it's a collective alternate memory. Collective alternate memory. I'm repeating it because that's not what you'll find if you go to Wikipedia. It's going to say something else. Oh, but to me, if what they say is a jumping to conclusion, if you look at their definition, is that really a definition of something to be described? Or are they associating it instantly with their own explanation for what's happening? And if so, toss that explanation and definition out. It's false. So, and this is a discernment again. So you can find any definition you want. But the Berenstain Bears, great example for people in Canada and America, maybe most English, actually a lot of countries might know the children's book, The Berenstain Bears. And people used to, I remember people would say, do you pronounce that Berenstain or Berenstein? Like, I don't know, I guess Berenstain, not sure. Well, that controversy is now over because there's a new controversy. Now it's only ever been the Berenstain Bears, like the little bears, the family bears have eaten too many blackberries and their paws are stained with purple. No, it was never that for me before. And I take it was not that for you either.
No, not at all. Yeah, not my memory at all. So even when you were getting have it in one of the interviews I was listening to, and they're like, Berenstain, I'm like, that just sounds weird. It's not Berenstain. Like, I just knew it wasn't. But it's curious that there's it's almost like I talk about Rupert Sheldrake talks about morphic fields, and I talk about that in this context too. It's just like there's this morphic field where people believe and remember and have experiences of it being the Berenstain Bears. And then there's others that are believing and have experience in history of it being the Berenstain Bears. So who's correct? Who's wrong? Can both be right? That's the question, right? It's just like when you're playing with two different timelines and two different timelines that created a pocket of history around that book or that series of books, is it there it can both be right?
Yeah, I would suggest definitely they can both be right. And they co-authored a paper about that, When Worlds Collide, and how to deal with this, especially in interpersonal relationships, when it's your family member, such as a spouse or child or parent, who absolutely insists that they heard you say or do something that you know you did not say or do. And now suddenly there you are in the thick of this. And it's not necessarily fun to be accused of something that you did not say or do, but they're certain you did. And they're not, you know them and they don't lie. So now what's going on? And so that doesn't happen too often, fortunately, but I'm putting that out there too, because I've definitely observed it sometimes with innocuous things. I've described it in my book, Reality Shifts, where my daughter, I heard her say at Disneyland, Mom, I need the bathroom. And I said, okay, I'll keep my eyes open. Next time I see one, we'll stop it. We'll just keep walking. I'm sure we'll see one soon. And then I said, there's a bathroom. And she looked at me like, why did you say that? I said, because you just asked me for the bathroom. She said, you didn't say anything. I said, yes, you did. So what I would propose is, what if both are right? And so that's going to be true for the Berenstain Bears. And it's a way of saying yes, and just it's fourfold logic, which is very Eastern logic, much more like quantum logic than binary. So we're used to binary logic. There's true and there's false, yes or no, black and white. In nature, there's the true and there's the false. Then there's true and false, it's a third category. And then there's not true, not false. So you've got four categories. So here we're saying, like, okay, we're doing yes and. So we're going to say both realities are true. We're going to hold that space in sort of a quantum field of possibility, very much like a quantum computer in the process of thinking. And we'll just honor both of these. When you've got someone that you love and you respect and you care about, and they're remembering something completely differently, and then you can point them to this and say, okay, I think this is a reality shift Mandela effect situation here. We've got two timelines and we're experiencing them both, and let's honor them both. So it's very interesting.
It's definitely a different way than we are being programmed to act, react right now, because a lot of times right now I'm seeing it there was a great kind of division before. There's a separation and division again being fed. And it's about, for me, it's about people fighting to be right. It's like, we don't need to fight to be right. We can agree that this is what you believe and this is what I believe, and it's okay that we have different beliefs, or we have a different experience of these two things that feel like opposite, but they're just perspectives, right? Whether it's a timeline perspective or a perspective you're holding in your mind, we don't need to fight to be right.
Exactly. We're witnessing some of the so-called scientific constants that have been changing. You mentioned Rupert Sheldrake, and he's been one of the best people to track that interesting phenomenon, which to me provides evidence again for exactly what we're talking about here, that these timelines are shifting, that the Mandela effect is quite real. It is collective alternative memory, and that we're therefore tuning into something equally viable past. So that means, as you say, facts can change, and that's okay. So it gets right back to that center again. Who are we? What is our intention? That's not usually the way science is taught. It's not usually taught like, oh, it matters who you are. That's going to be the way science will be taught, I guarantee you. And we're going to, it's sooner than we think, because like my past life in the future showed me through experience, lots of experience, learning to constantly be jumping back to be the ultimate observer in that game of Wigner bubbles. It's a game. It's kind of like hopscotch or something. But the game is, can you be quieter? Can you be observing? Maybe the way hunters would hunt their prey. And if you're also the hunted, then you can't afford to be seen. So you need to always be the outermost observer. And that's the one that can ultimately resolve the situation, you know, at that highest level, that's more people are going to be seeing, because you'll be farther back. It's kind of a topographical thing, but it's multidimensional. And it means, you were talking about linear timelines earlier, and that's cool, but we're about to become multidimensional. We're about to start seeing a lot more of the future changing the past. That's going to become normal also. So some of the things that sound, we're just on the edge of it. So we can talk about it now and people can be like, cool. And whereas before, like 10 years ago, this, I don't think we could have had this conversation.
Maybe you and I could have privately, but not publicly.
Not in public, right.
Yeah, there's definitely a more of an opening and a curiosity to, and because again, it goes back to people are feeling it. They're feeling something's happening and they can't quite understand it. The mind can't fully comprehend it because it's an experience. It's an experience that you have. And I remember I watched the movie Arrival just a couple months ago. And right at the point where she realized that time wasn't linear and her brain just shifted and something happened. As I was watching that, I felt my brain go like, and then I was just like, I was bawling and I heard the words, I know what I need to do now. I swore I heard it in the movie, but I think it was just my only, because I listened back to the movie again. I'm like, oh, it's not in there at all. But I heard it very clearly. I know what I need to do now. And my whole life changed in that instant. And my brain changed. The neural pathways all changed in my brain. And I was aware of different timelines before, but it was more like I would zoom in, zoom out, jump back. But in that moment, I had multiple timelines happening and I was sitting and looking at all of them all at once. And I had to stop talking a lot of times because I would be talking over here and then my voice, it would bring whatever I was saying there. It was very weird. And it's doing something similar to recently in the last couple of days. It shifted again. But I got to the point where I would be talking and all of a sudden I would stop and someone would look at me and go, Sue. And I'm like, oh, sorry. I was just over here for a minute. Like almost on a completely different channel, I had to come back. But my brain suddenly saw them all happening at once. And I do that when I do readings with people, when I do intuitive healing and I do readings. That happens to me all the time. But
Yes.
it was happening when I was just at the grocery store and like the regular stuff, and I couldn't shift it. So it was just like, okay, I just need to embrace that this is the new way. And I've kind of mostly acclimatized to it, although it's starting to shift again in the last couple of days. So I'm expanding again with it. But it's been very interesting to feel and start to experience them differently. And as long as my mind doesn't get too caught up in the how it's happening or why it's happening, I can kind of settle into it. But it's been very curious.
Yeah, that's a great. I love how beautifully worded that was. And to me, it feels like trusting intuition. That's what some people might call it. But I love the way you're being very specific. Like, yeah, it's kind of weird. It's like almost like zoned out, but expanded, and I'm really feeling that connection. Yeah, to me, when I'm looking for a true message from spirit, then it's kind of like a I'm looking for truth through exactly these anachronistic kinds of things. So I'll be looking for something that happened to me inexplicably in my past that I remember. So it's like a code, like you turn a key to a lock to open it. So if I'm getting a message, friend, foe, or higher self, I'll know it's friend and higher self when it lines up these ridiculously impossible things that you might call it synchronistic, but it's so far beyond that. So that it's in other words, I'm having a real-time conversation right now. That has an effect decades in my past that I suddenly remember out of nowhere now dovetails with something else. And then it's just like a key turning a lock. It opens and I'm like, aha, friend, hello. And then I get goosebumps and it's like, it's feeling like this is how we're all attuned throughout time, not going through linear time, but every step of the way, much bigger than fits in these little temporal locked 3D plus time bodies. Our true identity, I know my true identity is so much more multidimensional. I've been aware of it my whole life that I don't fit in this body. It felt like the wrong planet. It felt like I don't belong here. There was a big intervention with my guides about that little point, and they pointed out that yes, I do belong here, but I felt like I'm too weird. I'm weird even by weird standards. But now it looks to me like no, I'm kind of a guide wave, a pilot wave, and I'm part of the team of people like you and me. The weirdos unite. Yay. It's good to be weird. We're weird in the best possible way. And I think this is the time of the Great Awakening. This is the time for everybody to expand into this. And it helps if you can look at people and see, like I thought, if I talked about this weirdness in court, which I did once, I wanted to get off jury duty. I thought, I'll be excused. I'll just say the physics of why we can't know anything for real or for true, and two opinions can be equally true. I'll say that. And then I'll talk about my own experience, and they're going to boot me. But it was quite the opposite. And I knew I was in trouble when I'm watching the attorneys on both sides, the defense and the prosecution, and they're both looking more and more relaxed, like we have found our perfect juror. And I'm like, what am I doing wrong? So that is interesting. I think we're in the day and age now where we can say this. And if you say it with confidence, assurance, and we don't, I guess I don't look crazy, but I thought saying that in public, in a courtroom, it's a courtroom. I'm basically saying there's no such thing as absolute true or false. The only person that looked concerned in that moment was the judge. He leaned forward. He was not smiling. And he said, but you will adhere to the rules of this court. I'm thinking, my thought bubble was, did he not hear anything I just said? I'm like, yes. But it's like, doesn't he understand that he doesn't, like, I can't even.
Yeah, I hear you. Well, it's interesting because I was recently served
Hmm.
with jury duty, and I'm not feeling like I'm meant to. Like if I was guided, I would show up, but I didn't feel like I was meant to. And I'm like, okay, what am I meant to say that would help them understand that I need to be excused? And so a few things came in, but the one piece that came in is just because I'm a minister as well. And
Yes.
I'm like, I'm not to judge anyone. That is not my work. I practice non-judgment. So who am I to judge someone as guilty or innocent? So that for me was more as opposed to you talking about timelines and past and present.
I also said I was a minister and correct. I full
Yeah,
disclosure. I
you
said
just like throw it all out there. They still
everyone so
wanted
long.
you.
I loved minister plus martial artist. They're like perfect.
Yeah.
The only one that didn't love it was the judge.
Oh,
It's
that's hilarious.
like this doesn't. I think he's the one that got it. He's like, there's a problem here. Yes, thank you.
There's a conflict of interest here. Yeah.
Question he asked is like, but don't you see the razor edge you're on? Don't you see? Oh man, you don't argue with the judge. So it's like, okay, wow,
It's so
so
wild.
funny.
It's curious to like when I talk of when you I love when you said it's this and that, right? It's like it's not
Yes.
or, because we're so conditioned with the or. It's right or wrong, it's this or that. And for me, it's a lot of people are trying to connect to their divinity, their divine self, or their higher self, or their God self, whatever you want to call it. And then either they deny their humanness, or they're trying to escape the humanness and be in their divine self, or they're afraid of their divine self and really stuck in the humanness. But for me, it's about both. It's about bridging and being able to embrace our humanness, but also embody our divinity. And for me, the whole timeline piece and the awareness of our ability to choose, to go within and choose again, to go within and choose again over and over again. The fact that people now can understand that every time we go in and choose love, every time we go in and make a different choice, we can affect not only our experience of this present moment, but our perception of what may come in the future, and then also impact what has happened in the past. I love that when you're describing that, it's just like it feels so, because everything is in the eternal spiral of now, it's like everything's happening now simultaneously. I love that we can consciously make a choice in the present moment to shift not only the timeline we are on, but the experience of the collective as well.
Absolutely. Yeah, that excites me in a good way too. And we can't rush things. It's like growing flowers. There's no point forcing the petals and the buds to open prematurely. So everybody's growing at their own speed, and that's good. And so some of the conflict, I think that's a great point you made about people wanting this or that. That's that binary thinking again, hoping people don't like conflict. I don't like conflict either. And so they're hoping that there'll be some resolution with some objective reality we can all agree on. And that they'll even say like, but these are measurable things that we can agree on. And that would be like the judge again, but you will say that these are measurable things we can all agree on. Like, yeah, but aren't you hearing what I'm saying? It's like, okay, we can all agree that that's the way it is now. It's always been barren stained pears, but some of us remember the other spelling. So what does that mean? You know, like, okay, we all agree it's barren stained right now. Yeah, there used to be Bernstein. So it's interesting. Very interesting. And where do we go from there? What does that mean? Especially when you know things flip-flop. And just because it's that way today, Bernstein might go back to Bernstein. And that would be the flip-flop of flip-flops for a lot of people. Then they'll say, what the heck? You know, because these flip-flops are huge. And it's not a tug of war, like there's a winner and a loser. I think that when I see realities timeline switching for a collective of people, that it's really a big opportunity to recognize, look at the dynamics here. So the process is more important than any one of the so-called facts or, you know, what the reality happens to be at this moment. But giving up that certainty, that's a tough one for a lot of egoic identities. If you lock your identity into something where you believe you are based, you are this certification, you have received this designation, whether it might be through education, training, experience, what have you. And so we label ourselves, and when we do that to ourselves, we're not true to the actual identity of ourselves as consciousness, which is capable of literally timeline jumping to another reality, or we might have a skill set that we never developed in this life. And so then it becomes a movie like Everything Everywhere All at Once, but it's not just a movie, and it's not, no device is necessary. We're built and we're made to be able to do that kind of thing. And that, when you know that you're made for it, and you know you can, and you've done, you can do it, you've done it, you can jump to a reality where you didn't have the disease that you thought you had, even though that seems impossible. Or the cut that you have on your arm instantly goes away. Broken bone is instantly healed. Cancer is instantly gone. These are the things people have observed, which can, those can be measurable in a sense, but only in the sense of the memory. Usually there's not going to be a necessarily a trail that shows step by step a miracle occurred. So these are things we need, we're ready for. I think you're right. Some people are afraid of it a little bit. Like, what does this mean? So this is why it's good to have these conversations. I'm living this way. You're living this way. We're doing okay. So yeah, hopefully people can see we haven't gone nuts completely.
Well, I actually find there's more freedom and space for joy and for lightness because I don't get so caught up in what's happening in front of me, right? It's just like, okay, well, that's interesting. So I can practice more neutrality around stuff and I don't feel so reactive. And I'm able to actually meet things with a more of a curiosity and wonderment. So I live more from fascination, wonderment, curiosity, as opposed to before it was a lot of fear, stress, anxiety, worry, concern. And I used to nickname myself Serious Sue. I was so serious and it was so heavy because I could feel the weight of the timeline I was on with the world and the wounding and everything else, the history and everything was just so heavy on my shoulders. And now it's just like, it's very playful and light for me, even when the path looks challenging. I do have, of course, my moments of human heartbreak and kind of like that pang in your heart when you see something and you're just like, oh, like feelings of disheartenment, the way some people treat other people and recognize that it's just their fear or their own imbalanced energies kind of coming through them, their own shadow coming out as projection. But it is hard to watch. But in general, I feel like this is such a lighter way of being. And it when I finally let go of the need to know, believe, or understand what's happening, I really expanded my mind beyond what it could fully comprehend. I just give it enough understanding so it comes along for the ride. There's a real freedom. There's a real freedom of mind and a lightness of heart, I found for sure.
Oh, I love the way you described that. I went through a similar expansion with my Kundalini awakening when I was 32, 1994, and it took 5 years to integrate it. But it was, I just felt like that was crazy stuff because I was very stubborn. At that point, I had been, well, I was the mother of two young daughters. But previous to that, I'd been working in the corporate world as a project manager with an MBA degree, very driven, very, not maybe not worried exactly, but very serious for sure. And very sort of locked into a worldview. And for me, my Kundalini awakening sort of blew that wide open. So I was not able to, it was kind of terrifying, actually. It felt like all of the constraints that I had on what I thought was real kind of blew open in the sense that I was spontaneously remote viewing through situations that I had no, I don't even know how I could know that, or I would be instantly flying or seeing things that are only in spirit form, but they're able to interact with this physical reality, like throwing sticks and stones at the windows if I'm not grounded. Like if I was not, if I needed to learn to ground this energy pretty quickly because I was blowing out all the devices in my house. If I entered a room without feeling grounded, the light would go out, the refrigerator would go, everything would just blow up in like, on walking into the room. That's expensive, not to mention computers. And like, okay, so very quickly I learned, okay, this is real. You know, I could maybe deal with the sticks and stones hitting windows on when it's not windy, but this stuff is like, that's not acceptable. So I definitely had to calm down. And there was just so much to that Kundalini awakening. It was powerful. That's why it took 5 years to integrate. And I'd had other experiences throughout my life before that. So I think this is, you're on the, very similar path to mine in the sense that I kind of bought into the whole Western materialistic belief system that if you just do things according to the rules, everything works out. But then it didn't feel right. It did feel limiting. And then once I had the Kundalini awakening, there was no way I could live that way. I don't fit in it anymore. There's no way to fit back in and pretend. So very interesting. And so like you, I turned over the trusting to the much greater multidimensionality of myself, that these higher levels of conscious agency that I cannot really fully grok or comprehend in our little earthly body, this tiny little body that I'm in. And I feel like there's so much more to me that cycles through. So I'll sometimes wake up and feel like I'm seeing everything fresh and new. And I know I am, because this is some part of the greater whole of me. It's like, I get to be Cynthia today. It's really cool. But it's like the whole me is here. And she's like, wow, what the heck? And then trusting that collective, that multidimensional awareness that is playing through time, looking for those little markers that show, yes, but does this person, have they played with all of these little keys and indicators in these experiences? And if they have, wow. So I get miracles that come through at that level that are, they look impossible, but they totally fit what you're talking about, that movie that you saw. Forget the name of it now.
Arrival.
Arrival, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you touched on the idea of trust. It's like discernment and trust, those two things. But it's not about putting trust in the world, trust in what you're reading and what you're seeing and what you're hearing. The trust comes from that innate knowing that you can trust your divine source. You can trust your higher self, or your, what do you call them? The
levels of conscious agency.
Conscious agency, yes. It's like trusting that connection more than anything else. Because even trusting your own mind, I can't trust my own mind, because my mind will come up with thoughts or beliefs that are based on history or what's possible in the way of the human realm or the human experience or the human perspective. So I go beyond the mind and I really trust and tap into the knowing in my heart. Because for me, the heart is the bridge to directly to source. That's my bridge. It's not necessarily everybody's bridge, but it is a very powerful bridge for us. And it's a powerful center of insight and guidance and knowing that goes beyond logic and reason and beyond what the mind can comprehend, right? We're basically talking about something yes. that in a way that you can understand it, but it's incomprehensible to the mind. That's the nature of that's a lot of the nature of quantum experiences, right? It's just like the mind can only come along to a certain degree for the ride to a certain point, and then we kind of have to place the mind aside for a moment and go, okay, I'm going into this experience. You're not going to be able to handle this, so let me just immerse myself in that. And it's yes. in that experience then that we can come back in connection with our mind and change it and shift it or open it more.
And I share some of this in my new book, this Mandela Effect one. There's a whole chapter of these things, like my bilocation experiences, where typically I'll be daydreaming. And like one morning, it was winter or cold anyway, early in the morning, and my daughters were quite young and I needed to wake them up like I always do, but I didn't want to get out of bed. So I'm daydreaming. You know how you might just run through the in your head, it's like, okay, I got it. I did get out of bed. I'm walking down the hall. I open their door. Good morning, girls. I raise the heavy window shade that's very, very heavy, too heavy for them to move. And I open that. Time to rise and shine. I turn on their bedroom light. These are things they would never do. They can't do the opening of that window. They do not wake themselves up. They usually don't ever think to turn the light on. And then I'm still laying in bed. My reality, I did have that daydream. I know I daydreamed that. And then I hear little voices and I'm thinking, that's odd. And then I hear a pitter patter of little feet and they're peering into my room and they're saying, Mommy, why did you go back to bed? And I'm like, back to bed? And then they leave and I'm like, what? Up, and I go, look, their curtain is up. It's just me and my two daughters in the house, nobody else. Their light's on. They don't do that. And I said, who woke you up? You did. And that's not the only, it's happened several times. So another time, I mentioned cases where there were witnesses of the bilocation. And once when I gave a talk on the topic, we had a bilocation at that conference the next day. So and then I described the physics behind it. This book, I talk about the terms we people use when we talk about it colloquially. What's in the quantum physics that would allow us to do this? And then a whole chapter of my own, kind of out there, multidimensional experiences. We are ready for this. This is who we are. When we're certain of something, we are absolutely creating it. And so this is part of the reason that I'm not daydreaming things that are not how good can it get? Because I know that for me, whatever I'm imagining, it's creating. And so I know that. So therefore I need to be responsible. That's just how old I am as a spirit at this moment. Like, okay, I can't be messing around with that stuff. Not me personally. Maybe other people can, but I wouldn't recommend it anyway.
Yeah. I feel like the tolerance for that is becoming lower and lower and lower for all of us. So we all need to be aware. And I often will, if I have a thought and it kind of feels like it's going out there, I'm like, I call it back. I'm like, no, not that one. Let's just put that one back over here and delete that and,
Yes.
you know, reframe it and put something else different out there. So
Yes.
yeah, it's living consciously and with awareness and recognizing that every thought you have, every belief you hold, every action you take has an effect. It has a ripple effect, and it affects the all of creation, not just us globally, but all of creation. So to be living really consciously and with awareness and making that those conscious choices to go within, reframe it, translate it, change it, whatever you need to do, call it back if you need to, but yeah, definitely be aware of what you're putting out.
We can also ask ourselves, who am I? Like, what am I really doing here? And I just come back to, I love everyone. I wish the best for all concerned. That's what I'm living for. That's what I'm doing. That's who I am. And then it's just like the unification that happens when I call myself back like that is huge. It's just the opposite of a splintering or a fragmenting. It feels like, oh yeah, that's right. And then I cheer up. And then all the so-called facts, I've seen so many times that the fact, I don't care what they are, they can look pretty scary. Yes, I've had all my buttons pushed at once. Yes. So I'm not coming to you. It may sound fair, airy fairy, and how good can it get? Nothing bad's happened to you. Oh, that's not true. But, you know, I don't need to go into the dark side of things, but it's been pretty dark, very dark. And that doesn't matter. Even in those dark nights of the soul, I've had that moment. Like, what do I want to do? Who am I? What am I choosing here? I'm choosing, how good can it get? Like, even if this is the best you'll ever see and complete living nightmare. Yes. I've just gone hardcore into radical optimism, even in the darkest pit of massive despair, because I know that no matter what it looks like, it can change, and it will. So that really, how good can it get is actually a battle cry, but of the heart, of the soul, and wishing with love for the best for everyone.
Yeah. It's like,
Not,
how
not
could it get?
prescri-
Yeah.
yeah.
How could it get? How good could it get for you? How good could it get for all?
Yes.
Oh, yeah. I love that. Beautiful. Well, thank you so much for being here and for sharing your heart and speaking such radical truth. Your experiences are I very much connect to some of what you lived and experiences you've had, and I appreciate you being one of the beautiful beacons of light in this world doing this work, and I appreciate
Thank
you.
you.
Yeah. So if people want to connect with you, can you share your website so that people can
Yes.
find you?
Yes, I'll be doing a oneness of, yeah, you can see about the oneness events that I'm doing. I've got one on Sunday, the 27th of April. And then, so it's Julian Chamroy from, I think, Paris, France, and Paula Harris. And then we'll be meeting in person in Crestone, Colorado. But these events and my newsletter and everything, my books, meditation CD, they're all findable at realityshifters.com. That's realityshifters.com. And the papers that I've written, that's there too. So lots of good resources. And if you have trouble finding something, you can just send me an email. So you mentioned something about this paper. Which one was that? And I'll get back to you and give it to you. So love to hear from everybody. Thank you so much.
Thank you. So I will have the link to Cynthia's website under the description for this podcast and on YouTube as well. So if you didn't get that written down, it'll be there and you can easily click on it. I want to thank you all for being here, and thank you, Cynthia, for sharing your heart with us. And for all of you here and that will be listening to the replay, I appreciate you, I honor you, I see you, and we are so grateful for your presence in this world. Thank you all. Love and blessings.
Thank you for participating in our Living Oneness Initiative to unite our hearts in love for each other, our planet, and all of creation. If you would like to join us for a live gathering, you can RSVP at heartledliving.com/gathering.